people have actually just asked about this question here, the last question, similar question. It is there anywhere you suggest we can go in London to meditate with others? Where will you set up a sangha or a monastery in London teaching in your tradition? That's what I've come here for. So, Venerable Chan, this has to be another monk. To have a nun start doing this. So we try to get here to have a nice place. Once you have one nun, they grow. One, they get two. Just like that old story in the Catholic nunnery. Haven't told them any, have you? Yeah. In the Catholic nunnery, the priest came to visit every 3 months. And he came and he saw one of these nuns getting a bit bulgy in the middle. He said, "What is that, sister? What is that?" And she said, just gas. He said, "Yes, it's just gas." Okay. So he came again another 3 months later, and she's even much fatter in the middle. "Sister, what on earth is that?" It's gas. That's all it is, it's gas. Okay. And when he came 3 months later, that nun was pushing a pram with a baby in it. So the priest looked over, saw the little bub, the baby, and said, "Cute little fart, isn't it?" Yes. That's not how nuns multiply. No, right. So anyway, we're trying something for this type of tradition. So, and it's not in competition with others. We always try to compliment one another. So little by little, we have lots of nuns, lots of monks, lots of everybody sort of around this area. So, I mean, you can see just the way I teach. It's a bit of fun. It's also serious stuff. I'm not just a joke, I know my stuff. And a lot of meditation. And meditation, which is, I always think, is just, this is the way that meditation should be taught. It really works. If people get very peaceful, they do get jhanas of this. So, no, not in 2 days. Not really giving it enough time. But later on, it will develop. And so because of that, it's great to be able to teach. Personally, I do feel a commitment. This is the place where I was born. I grew up. I got so much of memories in this place. Not Roehampton, but Richmond, I said. You know, I used to do parties and hang out there in West London and Central London. So I do feel a bit of a responsibility to actually do something here. So that's actually why I'm here. So anyway, places to meditate, places to go. I don't know, even sometimes just making a little group for yourself, getting your emails, exchanging emails so that you can meet together in people's houses or whatever. Listen to what people actually do. You know, they listen to the talks on YouTube. Come together, listen to a talk on YouTube, meditate together, and form little groups and see how it goes from there. So, you know, you can exchange emails. The Adam Camper project, you probably have all the contacts, have you? Yeah. Well, poor Amina, she works so hard. So she makes all the good karma. So, Amina, you are going to get jhanas as soon as it's not working. So anyway, you can get people's contact, have a little group. You can have Anukampa London, Anukampa Brighton, Anukampa Glasgow, Anukampa Ireland. Where's everyone else from? Anukampa New York. Kent. Anukampa Berlin. Anyway, we call it franchising. Anyway. So, last little 20 minute talk, and then we do a meta meditation. A quarter of an hour talk, my goodness. So, all of you who have been here on this retreat and other retreats, hopefully you can appreciate all of the little teachings and the meditation and all the guidance, and you can distill from all of that some basic messages of a lot of kindness. a lot of acceptance, not rejecting anybody, not demeaning anybody. Everybody has their place. One of my best teachings is the trees in the forest. You go and try and find a perfect tree, Richmond Park or anywhere. There is no such thing as a perfect tree. All trees are bent and crooked, with branches hanging off, with damage on the bark. All trees are damaged goods. Prove me wrong, go and find a perfect tree. You cannot. And in fact, the trees which are the most bent and crooked, which have got all these bumps on the bark, are always my favourites. They've got character, those are the ones I love to look at. The damaged ones. So when I say that, if you are damaged goods, number one, you belong. You're part of the forest. Number two, you are the most beautiful part of the forest. The damaged goods. Because a lot of times people feel rejected, stigmatised, demeaned, that there's something wrong with you. Everyone else is having a good time, but not you. And that really sucks. So instead of that, this Dharma means you're all included. May all beings be happy and well, and that includes you. And nice thing about this Dharma, no one is ever judged. You're accepted. But whenever you judge somebody, oh, I was actually good at school, but never good enough. You can always do better. You only get 3 A-levels, you can do 4, do 5, do 6. It was always trying to compete and do better than everybody else. And after a while, I hated that. One of the worst things with O-levels and A-levels here in England is you are competing against your best friend. And that's awful. Even people you love and care for. Why can't you actually, you and your best friend, join together and share the marks? That would be wonderful. Because that would be hateful, you know, who does the best? Because you're my friend, I want you to do as well as I do. Well, I don't care, you do better than I do. But that is real life. Not competition, but cooperation. And caring for people. And sometimes in religion it becomes too competitive. People at the end of the retreat, they come along and say, how did you do? What did you get in this retreat? And you say, I got the delightful breath. So that delightful breath, I got that in the first hour. I got limitations. Whatever did you get? I got the white. Oh, white, that's nothing. I got the blue limiter. Blue limiter, oh, that's second class. I got the gold limiter. And that's called spiritual materialism. And it's just people, we do that in the world, who's got the biggest house, who's got the biggest car, who's got the most money, who's got the best degrees, who can run the fastest. That is materialism. And that divides society and creates so many problems. And sometimes we do that in religion as well. Who's got the best teacher? My teacher, that's a Brahm, da da, he's much better than that Savedo, da 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 da, he's much better than that Char, da 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 da. You're a Theravada, that's nothing. Zen is much better than Theravada. Na 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 na. No, Vajrayana, Tibetan Buddhism, the fastest way. Na 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 na. We're better than you are. That is so childish. So instead of doing that, instead of measuring, we just respect everybody. And in fact, it brings me on to one of the stories. A lot of these stories come from experience of life. Somebody knew that I was, say, a physicist before I became a monk. Still I'm a physicist. But they mentioned this story of Lord Kelvin, who was one of the founders of the Royal Society here in London, which is probably still the most prestigious society of scientists in our world. You really have to know your stuff to be get elected. Would have the letters FRS after your name, Fellow of the Royal Society. He was one of the founders. He was a great physicist, but also a philosopher. And he laid down some of the foundations of what eventually became the Industrial Revolution, when he stated the only way we could control nature is to learn how to measure her accurately first. Which is why any of you know the history of science or engineering, know that so much time was spent having standard weights, standard measurements of length, standard clocks which could measure time accurately, and only then could we have things like cars and aircraft and iPhones and stuff. You have to get measurement accurately first. So when they asked me what I thought of that statement, the only way to control nature is to learn how to measure her accurately first of all. Turn it around the other way. If you don't measure things, you can't control them. That's why many people are scared of getting all your details, you know, when you use Google or Facebook or whatever, because the more details they have about you, the more possibility there is to control. When they don't know who you are, where you are, they can't control you. That's why months and months, we're totally off the grid. I don't pay tax. I have no marriage license. And what else don't I do? No pension, no superannuation, no... I mean, don't exist. Which is very difficult sometimes. Because sometimes when you want to apply for something, you have to have identification. And they ask me, you know, please give me your bank account details. Don't have bank account details. Give me your mortgage for your house or your rental agreement. If I don't have a house, don't rent. Well, your salary. Don't have a salary. So for governments, monks and nuns, it's fascinating. We just do not exist. So it's very difficult sometimes. It's fortunate for me that I have two passports. I have a British passport and an Australian passport. And when you add those together, actually you can prove who you are. Without two passports, I just would not exist, according to governments. So, but when you don't measure, you can't control. So, what does not controlling mean? Letting go. So, don't measure yourself. Are you a good meditator or a bad meditator? Don't even go to that place. When you measure, you'll have a lot of stress. When you don't measure, good, bad, who knows? So don't measure yourself. Don't measure your meditation. Don't measure your partner, the one you live with. Are they good? They're bad? Once you measure them, you'll start to control them, make them better. When you don't measure, Ajahn Brahm, he says, Ajahn Brahm, if you measure me, then I can always do better. If you measure me, then I didn't do a good retreat, I could have done better. So we don't do report cards after meditation. As I say, we don't do A, B, C, D, E, F. Remember what those mean? What does A mean? Oh, arrogant. Arrogant. Yeah, because only sort of snooty, conceited people want to get an A. An F, what does F mean? Fantastic. So when your kid gets an F at school, say, well done, son. Fantastic. They never actually say what F means. So you have to interpret it. It means fantastic. A means arrogant. So I get in a lot of trouble with the school teachers when I say that. I jump on and try to get people to get motivated. But you don't get motivated that way. Actually, you get depressed and feel you're not good enough, which is awful. So, well, we don't measure anybody. When you don't measure yourself, then you can relax and just be. Which is the best tree in the forest? Just some people like straight trees. Crooked trees are my favourite. So, relax and just be. So how good is this meditation? Don't know. It just was. And that way, you'd have nothing to aspire towards in meditation. Be very careful. All of you, especially Sri Lankans, are all into getting enlightened, especially becoming a soul one, a stream winner. I don't know how many times the Sri Lankan people say, I just want to become a stream winner, a soul one. You know, it's more spiritual materialism for you. And you'll never get it that way. When you measure yourself, you're putting this huge obstacle. When there's a goal, there'll be craving. When there's craving, there'll be a lack of stillness. So one little way of meditation, which I'll develop, if you're really up to it, we're not going to do it today, when you get home, you sit down, close your eyes, and imagine you're the Buddha. You've done everything, you're peaceful, nothing more to attain, You're a Buddha sitting under the tree. You've got no more work to be done. You can relax. Other people have got work to do. You know, you're like, yeah, well, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, get rid of this defilement, get rid of that defilement. That is so much work, trying to get rid of stuff. I don't have to relax just to be. How hard can that be? So you know when you're at school, I remember being at school, you used to play, imagine you're a tree, put out your hands and all the kids were trees blowing in the wind. You know, you still can visualize things and imagine things. That's what you do when you are an acting. If you're an actor or just an amateur actor, you get yourself into a role, you imagine that role, you become that role. How about acting the part of a Buddha? Closing your eyes, this is the Buddha sitting under a tree. You get into that peace, into that calmness, into that stillness. And it's amazing just how you can do that. You won't be able to totally imagine yourself as a Buddha, but you get close. And all those qualities, which sometimes it takes you hours to develop, peacefulness, stillness, letting go. Just imagining you're a Buddha actually gets you a long way. Now, after 5 minutes of imagining you're a Buddha, then you can actually just let that peace and that stillness grow and develop, go even deeper and further. It's a little way of using imagination and visualization to take you much further in the meditation, because the Buddha doesn't measure. And also, all these notes and books which you read, sometimes I'm a bit embarrassed about all the books I've written, because one of the memories I have, this was when the Thai temple was in Ishin, and I used to go there most of the time as I'd fall asleep when someone gave a talk, because it was boring as hell, but every now and again you get somebody interesting. And once a Zen monk came from Japan. When he first came, he couldn't speak a word of English. What a waste of time that was. And after doing a quick two-week tour of England, very smart guy, he learned a few words in English. And I was there when question time came, and somebody asked the question, what do you think of Buddhism in England? Now, this was about 45 years ago. Well, I don't think it's actually changed that much. What do you think of Buddhism in England? They asked this Zen monk. And he replied, he didn't have much of vocabulary, but he used it so well. His reply was, Buddhism in England. Books, books, books. Too many, too many, too many. Dustbin, dustbin, dustbin. And that was so articulate for someone who only knew a few words. I always remember that. And what have I done? I've written so many books. But anyhow, some of the books can be useful. Don't just get your nose in books all the time. Listen to that book, read it, understand it, and practice it. Because sometimes people just hit each other over the head with the book, so respect, just arguing. All it's there for is to point to the Dhamma, learning how to be peaceful, learning how to be kind, learning how to be still, learning how not to measure. So everybody can have a place in your heart. When you measure, some people are excluded. When you don't measure, everybody can come in. Just like on this retreat. Sometimes, I don't know, did you ask them a question there? How Buddhist they were? Will they go to the temple? Will they keep 5 precepts? Will they have committed any crimes before? Did you actually ask those questions before you allowed them to come and sleep here overnight? Whether they were psychopaths?
We took our chances.
For goodness sake, don't measure people. Trust them. Don't measure yourself. Trust yourself. Somewhere along the line, somebody told you you're not good enough. And people believe that. And they become not good enough. One of the things I learned as a school teacher, a powerful exercise. I'm sure anyone who's done school teaching may have heard this one. In the time they had streaming in school, that there was two classes, I think about 13 or 14 year olds, it wasn't an important year. I mean, all years are important, but not as important as like O-levels or A-level years. So there's only two classes in the same year, two streams. And so when they gave them the end of the year examination, 60 children, they never publicised the results. They never said who came top, second, third, fourth. They just allocated them to do two different classes for the next year. Because it's only the principal and a couple of psychologists, if I remember correctly, who knew what was happening. What they did, they took the child who came top as a result of the exam and put them in the same class as the child who came fourth and fifth, eighth and ninth, 12th and 13th. The children who came second and third went into the same class as the ones who came sixth and seventh, 10th and 11th, 14th and 15th. In other words, they split the class up as evenly as possible based on the result of the end of year exams. And the principal selected teachers who she thought were equally able, classrooms with equal facilities. They made everything as equal as possible except for one thing. They called one Class A and the other one Class B. They're absolutely equal, but in those days, probably today, people assume Class A are the top half and Class B are the bottom half. They assume that. The teachers who weren't in on this assume that. Oh, Class A, this is the top stream, Class B's are the dummies. The parents assume that. Son, how on earth are you going to Class A? You've been doing no work and messing around all year, but well done, carry on. And some of these kids, poor girl, working her guts out doing her homework, you go into Class B. No more ballet or dancing lessons for you. You stay at home and do more homework. We all thought the Class B was the lower half and Class A was the upper half. And after 12 months, they gave the end of the year exam again. And the results were just as you probably now anticipate. The children in Class A did so much better than the children in Class B. They did just as you would have expected if they were the top half chosen from the year before. Literally, those who were given the title A became Class A kids. And those children were put in Class B. They believed they were the lower half and they became Class B kids. And that was not just education. That's life. Someone tells you you're Class B. You believe them. You become that. That's disgusting. My job is to tell you all that Class A, B stuff is bullshit. Doesn't matter who you are, you're just as accepted, just as amazing as anybody else in this planet. So no stigmatization, no measuring, just as beautiful the door of my heart's open to everybody, no matter who they are. Your meditation, totally accepted no matter what your meditation is. If you fell asleep and snored with somebody you did during this retreat, you're totally accepted. In fact, I admire you. Some people are so afraid of falling asleep, so tense, why would some people think of you? Those people who fell asleep and snored, you had no idea of yourself, no conceit at all. You were way in advance of everybody else. Well done. But no! I sat for 2 hours with a straight back. I never fell asleep at all. You've got a long way to go. Do you understand this? No measuring. Just to be kindness, compassion. Okay. No one shadows looking at me because I'm 40 too much again. She's been following me for the last 10 days, so I know that look by now. Don't get embarrassed, you're a good nun. Well, if she wasn't a good nun, if I didn't trust her, I wouldn't be working my butt off to get a monastery, which she will run. So, 400% trust. She's a good nun. So, now we can do a little metta meditation before we finish off. I'm going to go over time again, but there we go. Only half an hour, doesn't take that long, so no need to go. You're going to go to the toilet? No, wait for a little while. Here we go. So, I will lead you in the Etabram loving kindness meditation. Here we go. So, close your eyes. Go inside. Waste the time looking at me. I'm old and ugly. I am. That's all. At least I'm old. I am fat. But that makes, you know, more, as I say, if you haven't heard this one before, people ask me, are you going to be around next week? You know, I'm around every day. There's lots of benefits being my shape. If I fall over, I never fall on my face, I fall on my tummy. No doubt, scrape my back. At home, people like to put me just in the back seat next to the door because I have an extra airbag in case I was crushed. Oh, yeah. Okay, so stop that, jump up. So, close your eyes, be peaceful. Look after your body. Your body's been meditating so many hours on this retreat. Say thank you, body. Some of you have been sick, and you managed to get your body to come here. Say thank you to your body for allowing you to come on this retreat, even though there's so many sicknesses and pains and stress and all sorts of stuff. Thank you, body. Even my body, I say thank you. Been here 10 days, I should have really suffered from jet lag. I haven't. Thank you, body, you're so good to me. Letting me have energy in the afternoon and evening. Comes in at 4 o'clock, it's midnight in Australia now. I should be fast asleep. But my body is behaving so it can help. So when you appreciate and show gratitude towards your body, it relaxes. You give your body a little bit of kindness and it will be peaceful for you. Thanks, body. And now just watch your breath just for a few minutes. Just breathing in peace, just for a couple of minutes. Breathing in peace, breathing out, let it go. Even though I'm going against my teachings by asking you to watch the breath, just do it just a little bit. Just to settle yourself. Just breathing in peace, breathing out, let it go. Breathing in peace without let go. No measuring, don't try to attain anything. Just being here. Relaxing the body, relaxing the mind as much as you possibly can. Now I will do my guided metta loving kindness meditation. I often found that it's hard to generate loving kindness at the very beginning. It's like lighting a fire. If you put a match to a log, you will never catch the flame. If you put a match to a piece of paper, it catches the flame. It gets alight. And on the burning paper you put kindling, small little slivers of wood. When they cut fire, you put bigger pieces of wood and bigger pieces of wood. Little by little, you increase the size of the wood until you can put the logs on. When the logs are burning, you can even put wet logs on. The fire is so hot, it can evaporate all the moisture, and even the wet logs can burn. That's the simile which I use for loving kindness. You start on a very easy object and build it up until the hardest objects are put on last of all. So I use my imagination, visualization. I just happen to like kittens, cats. But more, I like dogs as well, but I've got more affinity with kittens, cats than with dogs. So I imagine a little kitten. If you prefer, you can imagine a little puppy or a baby. If or a little rabbit, if you have rabbits. If none of those animals really catch your kindness, sometimes people imagine a pot plant, a little sapling in your garden which really does need your care. Use imaginary object first of all, something simple. So when I say kitten, you can use any of these other primary loving kindness objects. If I imagine my little kitten, I've neglected her for the last 10 days, been over in London. Little kitten probably misses me. It's not just food which different animals like. They like love. To be given love, receive love. So imagine my little kitten, lonely, maybe afraid I might not come back. Just eating, but not really enjoying life. Imagine my little kid suffering. And then I arrive back in my monastery and see the little kid looking at me. Come home. The little kid running up. And you take it in your arms and hold it to your chest and stroke it. My little kitten who really needs my love, my kindness, now has it again. And you can feel her little body, just so soft and so smooth like satin. Her kitten's fur is just so beautiful to touch. And this little kitten trusts me 100,000,000%. I've looked after it, cared for it. I'm his friend. She just nestles into my chest. I feel her head against my robe. Just hold it so softly. And this little kitten just purrs. Purrs in joy. As I hold that little kitten close to my chest, I say to this little kitten, kitten, I really care for you. Truly, truly, truly love you. I know that you can't always be cuddled by me, the lady. You'll grow up into being a big cat and you'll go off into the forest. I don't know what you get up to in that forest at night time, but you're just being a kitten or a cat. And I care for you. Little kitten, may you grow up to be a happy cat. Lots of fish, or chicken if that's what you like. I'll even give it for my own bowl, even though I want to. It's much more fun to give it to you than eat it myself. Little kitten, your happiness is my happiness. When you are ill, I am ill. When you are afraid, I suffer too. Little kitten, the door of my heart is open to you. Little kitten, may you always find a nice, safe lap where I can cuddle you, stroke you. Even though that sometimes when you go on my lap,
I'm so sore and stiff, I want to move, I want to go to the toilet. But no, I don't want to disturb you. I just want to be with you and see you sleep comfortably, curly, with all your cat dreams. I generate this beautiful feeling of warmth, protection, nurturing, care, love towards my little imaginary cat. As I hold it to my chest, I start to feel the skin just on that area covering my heart region start to tingle, get excited. Because when I start to develop the emotion of loving kindness, that is a part of my body which has the counterpart physical feeling to kindness, the love, to compassion, the tingling in my chest area. Little kitten, may you be happy and well. May you always be well fed and safe. You're small, I can protect you. As I start to imagine a glow, rays of beautiful golden light start coming out of my chest from the heart region, bathing this wonderful best friend. How a human being, a man who can't speak cat, and a cat who can't speak Pali, how we can get on together, understand each other. We do. Dear little kid, may you always know you have a friend who cares for you. As I cradle this little cat in my arms, creating with my commentary, feelings and emotions of kindness and nurturing and compassion to my imaginary friend. Breathing it with this beautiful golden light coming from my chest of loving kindness. Irradiating it. This is what I mean by putting a match onto a piece of paper. It's easy to create those feelings of love and kindness towards an imaginary object. And once it is tangible, I can feel the loving kindness, then I replace the object with a real person. So now you imagine someone, the person in this life who is closest to you. It could be your partner. It could be your best friend. It could be your child, a dear son, a wonderful daughter that you're so close to. Imagine them, keep your eyes closed, imagine them as if they're right in front of you. The best friend, I really care for you. I really wish you to be happy, well, and protected. Just like my little kitten. You need my love, and I need to love you. My dear friend, my closest partner in this world, my closest associate, I care for you. It doesn't matter how strong or powerful they look, we all need to be cared for, to be loved, appreciated, respected. So give them all of that, with your eyes closed, imagining your closest person in this world right in front of you. And as you make this commentary and these beautiful words of loving kindness towards your best friend, imagine the golden light coming out from your chest, the golden light of compassion, of metta, love, or whatever you wish to call it, spreading right inside of them. Bathing them, drenching them from head to toe, from tip of the finger of the left hand to tip of the finger to the right hand. Drenching them with your kindness and well-wishing, your care, your love. You're important to me. I really want you to be well, happy, successful, whatever you do. Anything I can do to be of service, to help, to make you happier, to increase the width of that smile to take away your tears, to protect you from your fears. I really care about you, really. As you also imagine two invisible arms coming out from your side, going around their back and pulling them into your heart. This is beautiful loving kindness spreads to your very, very best friend. May you be well and happy. May you get enlightened way before me. That's what I want for you. Your happiness is my joy. That's what it means to care for somebody. And once that flame of loving kindness is stronger, then you can put on some other objects without opening your eyes. Imagine all the people in this room, all the people that you have sat next to for 2 days, the people you've had breakfast with, lunch with. They're no different than you. They've had their frustrations, they had their joys, their successes, their failures, their fears. They've also had the same sort of pains in different forms, different intensities. As human beings, we do share sicknesses and pains and old age and death and loss. So we share together. So imagine all the people in this room and spread this beautiful golden light of 100% acceptance and respect. I really respect everyone here. I don't want you to change. Really, you're just gorgeous as you are. The door of my heart, you're saying this to everyone in this room, the door of my heart is totally open to everyone here. You have a place. I just love you coming in. As you spread this beautiful warmth of loving kindness, acceptance, non-judgment, non-measuring, just I love you for who you are. No discrimination. You don't have to improve. Just like that monk I was talking to, as soon as I came to his presence, I felt this incredible love and acceptance and warmth. Didn't have to prove anything anymore. May all beings in this room be at peace, knowing that you are loved and cared for. You don't need to improve. You don't need to earn anything. You don't need to achieve anything. You've got enough as it is. As we open the door of our hearts to one another, may all beings in this room feel a peace of deep relaxation and self-acceptance, self-respect, knowing that there are trees in the forest and every one of you belongs. May all people in this room find peace in your hearts. May all people in this room feel this beautiful freedom, this liberation, when you let go. You just are, not going anywhere, not trying to achieve things, but just accepting yourself in this moment, totally, and appreciating your own beauty right now, each in your own ways. As you send this beautiful light of acceptance, kindness, love to everyone in this room, and you receive their love with this beautiful, warm light, golden light of loving kindness fills this whole room and spreads through the doors, the windows, the floors, goes down those staircases. I still don't know my way around this place. It's a maze. But send it everywhere, just in case. A couple of times I've gone round and ended up where I started from. Good matter. Send it to all those nuns who've been looking after us, the people in the office I've seen. Send it to the birds, making all the noise, for the little rabbits and squirrels. May all beings in this kindness center receive my love, my care, my respect. May all be well and happy. This is beautiful golden light of acceptance, respect, well-wishing, love, goes right throughout the center. As it spreads out to the great, beautiful Richmond Park, all the deer, the ducks which I saw through my window, the golfers, the birds, in the other direction, the busy town of Roehampton, with all the cars coming and going, that'll be you later on, all the people in the shops, all the dogs, the cats, the birds, and all beings in this vicinity. May you feel that in this moment, people are concerned about you. We care about you. You are not alone. As this beautiful loving kindness goes to the whole great city of London. Many relations and friends there, and most people you never know, but they also deserve to receive your well-wishing, your kindness, your love. In this city there are people who have argued, people who separated from the people they really love, said stupid things, done idiotic acts, and feel so sorry they've hurt some of the most important people in their lives. There are people in the waiting rooms of hospital terrified that their loved one might not survive. There are people sick, hurting all night, all day. And also people just having a wonderful time. May all beings in the great city of London receive our loving kindness. Know that you don't have to prove anything. You don't have to be a friend or a relationship to receive our love. It's given unconditionally, freely. And the more you give, the more love you have. It's this beautiful light of loving kindness, a golden glow like a blanket spreads over the great city of London. I've got so many friends, people I've met where I grew up. So easy to love the people in the city and the animals and the birds and all the crawls on the ground. May all beings in London be happy and well. And then you spread the loving kindness, the blanket, even further. Imagine the golden glow spreading over the whole of England, to places you've never been, spreading up to Glasgow, Scotland, Wales, over the sea into Ireland, where many of you come from. You've got people you love and care for there, and people you've never seen, animals, birds. Go over to Europe. Brexit is just it's not real. Nothing can stop the love going to people who are different, separated, over and over, uniting everyone. To Belgium, to Germany, going even further. Further over the whole of Europe and Africa and the United States to New York, all those incredible people in New York, totally eccentric, lighting, lovable. May you all be happy and well, free from pain and suffering. The whole of the Americas, down to East Asia, South Asia, Sri Lanka, India, Nepal, over to Malaysia, China, down to Australia. Oh, there's just so many people I love down there. Spreading over the whole world. may all people, all beings, receive my loving kindness, our loving kindness. May all beings know that they're accepted and cared for. Know that they can be free from fear. We are looking out for you. May all pain just be released a little bit just because of our love, our kindness. I still remember my mother kissing my knee, kissing it better, and the pain went immediately. The power of love and kindness is immense. We should bathe this world in the golden glow of love and kindness. How do you feel? Now there's one person you've left out. Spread the love to the whole world, but now we come to the hardest log of all to take the flame. That's yourself. Without opening your eyes, imagine you're standing in front of a mirror, looking at yourself. You know who you look like. Sometimes we're so cruel to ourselves, so hard. Look at yourself. You're like that little kitten. Of all people, you need your own love, your kindness, forgiveness, acceptance. Tell yourself you belong. You belong in your own heart. Any part of you which has been rejected, which you're ashamed of, guilty of, bring it inside. That's who you are. And if you have any confidence and faith in me, you are more than beautiful enough, kind enough, good enough. So looking at yourself in the imaginary mirror, say to yourself, I belong. I am more than good enough to receive my own love. The door of my heart, my own heart, is open to me no matter who I am, what I've done, where I go. Come in. And imagine you're extending these imaginary arms to this image of yourself, going round the back and giving yourself a hug, bringing yourself right side. I care for me. I respect me. I've gone through such difficult times, troubles, pain, deep pain. I deserve my love. Come in. As you give this beautiful loving kindness to yourself, from head to toe, from tips of the fingers of the left hand to the tips of the right hand, you drench yourself in beautiful golden loving kindness. I care for me. You don't need to be anything else. You don't need to achieve things. You've already come home. This is where you belong, inside your own heart. We have to bring this to a close. So imagine all that amazing energy which we shared over the whole globe. Imagine drawing it back, drawing it in, pulling it in, leaving the warmth for taking back the light. Until you draw it in, draw it in, draw it in, into England, into London, into Roehampton, into Kairos Centre, drawing it into this room, drawing it into your heart, until you imagine it like an intense golden ball of incandescent loving kindness right inside your body above your heart. And you visualize your heart as a pure white lotus flower fully open. And this golden light of loving kindness hovering just above it. The only thing which can hold such beautiful energy is a pure white lotus. So imagine the lotus slowly closing up around this ball of loving kindness inside your own being, closing up to keep it, to protect it for another time, another place. Now keep your eyes closed while I give the blessing.
Discuss and look out for a bikini project for those of you who don't know what it's all about. So the reason I've come here, I was really involved in re-establishing bikini ordination. Why I did that? Because I could. Sometimes they say, why did you climb Mount Everest? Because it's there. I could because I had the power, the following, the support. Other monks didn't have, so don't criticize other monks for not doing it. They were in a position like I was. I was separate in my own monastery, lots of power, knew all the reasons why. And so we started a bikkhuni ordination. But this is my character. I don't know why, where I got this from, maybe my father, my upbringing, I don't know. But when I start a project, I have to see it through to the end. You can't leave it halfway. So you ordain bikkhunis, you train them, make sure they've got a place to practice. So you've got, say, a bikkhuni like Venerable Chanda, very skilled. She doesn't know how many skills she's got yet. I know, she just needs to bring them out. And there's that place.
People say, where can we meditate with the goodies? No place in England. So, one of my favourite stories, Proverbs, rather light a candle than complain about darkness. If there's a problem, do something about it. So that's why I'm here, trying to get a place for bhikkhunis to train, practice, to be good. We're only starting out. Where that actually happens, how it happens, who knows. You get it started and just where the seeds fall and see what happens. So that's what we're here for. And I'm sure it will happen. There's enough sort of support. It's not just teaching the Dhamma. It's not just meditating. It's doing a bit more than that. So each one of you, all the females here, I feel embarrassed. You can't just come to a monastery now, all day in a practice. I feel embarrassed that my other monks in the whole tradition haven't done this yet. Really unfair. So, do something about it. I've done as much as I possibly can. All donations from this trip, even my airfare, I get somebody else to sponsor that. But I take nothing back except tiredness. I don't mind. It's good. So I really busted my cup. It's amazing. The more effort you put into this, the more energy you have. That's been my whole life, serving others, and that's why I'm really healthy. Weird, but this is so true. We used the early days in Thailand as a monk. All our robes we had to make ourselves. No shops we can buy robes from. Get white cloth, we had to learn how to sew. I had to learn how to use a sewing machine and make the robe myself. And it's a big robe, takes a lot of time. Once you've sewn it into a robe, then you've got to dye it. How do you dye it? You don't buy dye from the shop. There are no shops in Thailand. Not in that part. We had to use the wood from a jackfruit tree. We'd get a knife, a machete, sharpen it up, and chop it up into little slivers. That took long enough. And then we would get water from the well. Many times I lost the bucket and had to go into the well to get the bucket back. It's true. And so you got the bucket from the well, and you had this big dish, like a salad dish, but maybe 20 times wider, and metal, and you put ash on the bottom so it would protect it from the soot. And you put it on this big stove, you get wood from the forest, light the fire, and boil the water, put the chips of jackfruit wood in the water, boil the hell out of it, took hours to get the sap out, and you'd strain the sap and put it in a big pot, and later when you got enough brown water, you'd concentrate it till you got the dye, and then you would dye your robes. Really hard work. One robe would take about a day and a half of work. And so it was our tradition that when you ordained, you would sew your robes and dye them yourself, just to show that, you know, you're really into it. You know, you remember those stories that sometimes before you ordained you had to sit outside the monastery gate for 3 days before they let you in to show you were serious. For us, just making our own robes. So there's 3 or 4 monks making their own robes. They've been without sleep for a couple of days. You know, 48, 50 hours work because you couldn't leave the dye pot. And later night, after the evening meeting meditation, maybe 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, I went to see them and said, look, the head monk has gone to sleep. He won't know. I'll look after the dye pot tonight myself. You guys can take a rest. They never argued. They were off. He disappeared so quickly, I remember that. Because if ever you've been without sleep for a couple of days, you know what it's like. It really hurts. So I was up all night, so looking after the dye pot for doing 3 or 4 months' work, because I could do that, I was strong. I knew what I was up to. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, that's when the morning bell went, and the monks came back to look after. They said, thank you so much, just, you know, 4 or 5 hours sleep was all we needed to get the worst part of lack of sleep. And they carried on. And instead of going to see myself, I went to the morning meeting, do some chanting and meditation. That morning, there was no scoff and twop at all. My energies were huge. The meditation was gorgeous. And I couldn't understand that because most mornings in Thailand it was really hot, humid, and I was always sleepy. That morning, no sleepiness at all. And at first I couldn't understand why, what's going on? And I asked the abbot what had happened. I told him, look, don't blame those monks. They're really tired. Now, it's my fault. I broke the rule and helped them out. He said, oh, of course there's no nothing wrong there. It's a very wonderful thing for you to do. It's compassion. I said, well, why have I got so much energy? I haven't slept all night. And he said, because you've served. You've helped others. And that great light bulb went on in my head. That is how you get lots of energy. Helping others. Weird. But you get much more energy when you serve and help others than if you go to work in the office. You work for hours that way. It really is true compassion. I got this free energy of kindness. So thank you, Venerable Chanda, for making me work like a dog for the last 10 minutes. You get lots of energy. So that's fine. That's where my pretend like went. Because I was doing something good. If I was coming here to tour around, see castles, or mess around, I would have been so sleepy. But when you help others, you get huge energy. So, try it out and see. Serve. See how you can help. Whichever way you want. Because when you start a project like the Anna Kappa Vikuni Project, it's not just the money, it's other things which. Now, little Chanda over here, she wants support, friendship, community. And that's more important than anything else. She knows that, yeah, there's people looking out for her. Because being a nun alone in the country, you are so vulnerable. We don't have any money. It's against our rules. If we get stuck somewhere, we really get stuck. And you can get out your credit card. You can sort of go and do something, but we can't do that. So, please look after her, make a nice community. And that means that with communities and friendship everywhere, then that is the most important thing. When I first started Bodhinyana Monastery in Perth, people would come and say, where's the monastery? We hadn't had any buildings yet. I said, this is the monastery. There's no buildings. This is the monastery. What do you mean? Where's the buildings? The people, that's the monastery. The community. The few monks were there and all the people who supported them. That is a monastery. So to build a Bhikkhuni monastery here, it's not just bricks and mortar, it's the people. I think we've pretty much built a couple of Bhikkhuni monastery already in these last 2 weeks. Now we need to have the buildings which come afterwards. The most important thing has been done. And when you do these things, it's amazing just how unexpected things happen. Somewhere someone has got a piece of land or some place they want to give, they get inspired. Instead of leaving it to their kids, we'll probably waste it. They say, oh, we'll give it to the nuns. We'll get to do something. One of the reasons I'm behind this is because people know me. I am, again, I deliver. I'm around a long time. I'm not going anywhere soon. Don't worry about me getting fat. I'm going to have a heart attack. I do not have a heart attack. Unfortunately, I'm going to be around for a while yet. So, you know there is a continuity. That's one of the things which I remember in the early years of building a monastery in Australia. Why would people give any money? We didn't know whether we were going to be there for the next year or so. They didn't know who we were. But once we had that stability, I've been in that monastery for 33 years now. Everyone knows me. Trust me, they see me. I'm a known quantity. That's why they say, well, we give it that lesson, we know where it's going to go. We know it's going to be well used, looked after, not going to be wasted. That actually encourages people. Unfortunately, in today's world, generosity, your heart just hurts when you see you give money to some charity, and all it goes to is giving these people in foreign countries having a big four-wheel drive SUV, a new one, staying at five-star hotels. That's not what you get the money for. But we don't do that. So, any cent, dollar. And
They're going to make me a trustee. I'm going to make sure you don't waste anything. I'll run them out. I'm not going to ruin my reputation, which is really solid. So we're going to make sure it's done properly, openly, so you all know where every P goes to. That's really important. So anyway, that's what we're going to do, and we'll just see what happens. I have got this incredible faith, because from experience, when you really do something good, inspiring, this is inspiring, things come out all the way, things you never expect, things which, wow, that is inspiring, and how it all comes together. You don't need to worry and think, oh, I can't really afford very much. Finally, you don't need to. There's others in this world who are just ready, waiting for a project like this to make it happen. It may be you, maybe somebody you know. Wait and see. That's my life. Weird stuff happens. You find things which, oh, where did that one come from? And it's so inspiring. Even little things, like our local Tibetan monastery, they found some nice land, could not afford it. The next day someone won the lottery, so we can afford it now. That happens, weird stuff. So anyway, see what happens, and I'm sure in a year's time we'll have something more solid than people. Actually, people are solid. See what happens. And next thing is some of the women here ordaining. Even some of the guys, if you really want to ordain. In the Bhikkhuni monastery, you can go to Thailand. Doesn't cost that much to have a gender reassignment. Sorry, I'm not going to go there. But as a rather weird sense of humour. So who knows? See what happens. Okay, now, that's me starting off. May you say something?
As usual, I jump down to spouse and all the most inspiring and important things. But I've kind of like to hear from everybody else. It's been really heartening during this tour to receive all your support, whether energetically, just reflecting back at us, you know, so much enthusiasm and so much kindness, or coming forward with offers. Like just now, Ajahn, you probably didn't hear that, but somebody here offered to make some merchandise and raise funds for us that way.
Nice.
And also to take over the webmaster role, which is exactly the role we're looking to be filled.
Oh, right.
So these kind of things keep happening, and it's so inspiring. So I completely agree with Ajahn on saying that, you know, it is the people that make it. And at the moment, because it's in its preliminary stage, it could go in any direction. It depends who gets involved and to what extent, you know, to where the land is offered or maybe a place is offered. So it's very open, and I think that's exciting because it means everybody who contributes has some influence and becomes a part of creating the culture of the place. So in the beginning, the vision is for something quite modest. You know, realistically, we need to be able to afford something and also develop gradually. I think it's important to have like a strong group of people.
Something like Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
Humble.
Council tax could do a lot on that one.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll start small, and I think the emphasis is going to be definitely on cultivating kindness in everyday life. So not only meditation, but the whole Eightfold Path can be practiced in that kind of community setting. But the focus will be on harmony and meditation, and Ajahn Brahm's going to keep coming until it's done, and even afterwards. So we'll definitely make a big kitty for you as well.
Hey, I am a humble monk as well. And so I'm very busy, so get your skates on, make it happen quickly.
So, but if anybody has any questions or would like to, I don't know, ask about why we need such a thing in the first place.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to offer, I'm a graphic designer, so I do a lot of communication design.
Fantastic.
And stuff like this, so I can really write emails.
Yeah.
I'm still in communication with, well, she's called Anna now, but
Anna Tanzani. Oh, yeah.
So
I
do some stuff for her occasionally,
oh,
so it would be an honour.
That would be great. Thank you. Fantastic, yes. Give me your contact. It's when I hear this kind of comment, I feel so inspired. If it was just for me, there's no way I'd do it. Sometimes I think I must be completely mad. But then when I hear that other people are so enthusiastic like that, it gives it the energy and inspiration.
Well, I mean, all the nuns, kind of, I never got, well, I was there when they all left.
Yeah.
But I remember Ajahn Chah saying to me that she didn't know if he ever leaves anywhere, really. And I really understand that now, because so much of their wisdom that they were so generous to give to me has just helped me enormously.
Fantastic.
Is there a place where you are staying now where we can look after you on a day-to-day basis, bring down and do offerings to you?
Not yet, but if you say that you're interested in that, then that makes it more likely to happen. A few people during this trip have offered me a place to stay for maybe a month or 2 months or something like this. But I guess it's really when offers like this come forward, then we can actually start to do it. And I always have my bowl as well. So.
Could you tell us exactly your practical needs, what you need, where you need to come to England, or have you got a sense of giving us a bit of an idea of what you
yeah.
what you actually personally
yeah,
need
yeah.
to get the project going in England
okay.
for
the road. Yeah, the rough kind of idea in my mind over the next year is to really kind of allow the trust to consolidate. So the people that we have working with Anna Campo, I think it's about forming relationships, forming a solid vision and getting all the legal things really, really clear. So this year I'm going to be doing quite a lot of meditation overseas and also visiting other bikini monasteries. And also like getting familiar with teaching in different contexts, so gradually kind of developing in that way and allowing the trust to consolidate. And then Ajahn Brahm is supposed to come back next year.
It's sort of a secret, but not really, because it's quite likely.
And I think after that we'll start to look at
basing
here. Yeah, we'll kind of assess how far we've come and
how the trust.
What
you you talked about it consolidating, how that happened to your, how would it be
Skype, internet, yeah. This year was mostly consumed with simple things, like really the basics, setting up a website, getting kind of graphic designers involved, and getting some flyers, publicity, Facebook page, and organising the tour, which was the main thing, and putting together the trust. But we've not had that many meetings.
If someone's coming up with you something tomorrow,
yeah.
That change things?
Of course, yeah. Sort of flux.
It's interesting, you know, because
Yeah, it's really hard to say.
I've got
a
lottery ticket. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to talk too much, but I'm going to change now. First, I wanted to say, I think I may have told you before, Ben and Pretender, but I used to say to my husband, if ever we get divorced, I will become a bikini and run away and join a nun. And I had no idea there wasn't that possibility.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Until
you came along with the project. So I'm very grateful. I would like to help, I'm not sure how. Perhaps in a few months I'll get got my kids But I just wondered who the trustees were.
Okay.
And I also wondered is anybody looking out for a building? Where you're at on the land and the building side of things?
We're not doing that yet, simply because we don't have the funds yet.
And
yeah.
No one's looking for space or
We're keeping our eyes and ears open, but it's more a temporary thing at first, I think. Yeah.
What is your preference? What is your ideal location you're thinking of? If there is a genie come over the box.
Yeah. I think realistically we need to start somewhere near a city just so that people have ease of access and come and visit and we can develop a kind of local community. But in the long run I would like to inch away from cities and buildings and noise and go out into the countryside, because I think that attracts a different kind of support, which is more a kind of on the ground community spirit So, for example, I was in America and I met some bikinis over there who'd started off in San Francisco, and they stayed there for a couple of years, got their teaching together, got their support together, and then they moved 3 hours away from San Francisco. And they don't have people coming daily with Donna, but they tend to attract younger American women who want to come and experience that kind of monastic lifestyle in the nature, you know, living a very simple life and very attuned to nature and the environment. So they tend to stay for longer. So it's quite an intimate kind of feel. So I kind of like that. And most of their support comes through the teaching they give. But it takes time to develop. I think they've been out there about 8 years now, and it's just starting to really take off. And women are coming with no aspiration to ordain, just, you know, the idea of let's see how it is. And by the time they leave, they're thinking, I might have to have a little chat with my family now. So it's attracting people, yeah. But it's open, is the answer. It's very open, and it really depends where the support is. So that's why I say it's largely in everybody else's hands. Yeah.
As I mentioned to you early on, it's pretty much entirely anything spiritual around the area because it's all agricultural.
Yeah.
You know, I'm closer to the sheep than anything. But not far away, which is Milton Keynes, and it's quite a lot of various religions and temples and stuff like that. But there isn't a proper, like, Buddhist temple, apart from the Japanese ritual nationalism.
Yeah, that's why we have to start somewhere where there are more people, so we get a big enough community to kind of swing it one way or another. Yeah.
Do you understand how rare you are? You need to see yourself through other eyes because we live this life, and you see everything from our perspective. Wow. this is historically mind blowing. It's you that's doing this. Can you feel that?
There's a fine line between feeling that and knowing it isn't me.
Yes.
Because if I actually start to think this is me doing this, I'll panic and I'll think I'm not ready. It's not, you know, I must be crazy. But because it's always such a large group of people involved and so many conditions behind it, you know, so many years of practicing and then coming into contact with the right teachers, being asked the question at the right time, you know, how about starting the monastery? It's so many causes and conditions coming together. But, I try not to think about that too much, actually. But thank you, yeah. I think if I really did, I don't know if it's brave or stupid. Yeah.
Okay.
Who's then you?
Obviously meet you. And I just have a question. Are you living in England at the moment?
Right now I am.
Are you by yourself?
Yeah. I'm travelling a lot at the moment. I'm visiting different Buddhist societies and other bikini monasteries, for example in the States, where I'm going back to in January. So I'm spending a few weeks here, a few weeks there, and basically moving around quite a lot because I don't have a base here yet. So.
Can I make a suggestion that some, in England, as you know, land prices are stupid, and renting has become like the new thing to do. But renting doesn't involve such an upfront amount of money to be done like straight away.
Right.
And if you're thinking that you might like to base yourself around a city to start with and then move in a few years, buying is really expensive. But so I'm just wondering whether that renting is the more fashionable possibility.
It may well be, yeah. Yeah, thank you. I think it was this gentleman.
I was wondering, I don't know not much about the different schools of Buddhism, but I was wondering what schools of Buddhism allow bikunis to become ordained and what don't, like, are more people moving that way, or some traditionally have and some don't? Because near me there's a Tibetan Buddhist place, and that's run by Lama Zangmo, who's a woman,
Right.
But I know that some schools, I don't know really.
As far as I know, in the Tibetan tradition, they still haven't come to actually allowing it within their own tradition. So what tends to happen for a lot of women is that they go to Hong Kong or other Mahayana countries. I think Taiwan and Korea have a lot of bikini ordinations. And there's actually more bikinis there than monks now, I think. So they're really quite strong. They have huge learning institutions and monasteries, basically, with, you know, where they're trained to become teachers. So I think some of the Tibetan teachers, leading nuns, have been to those countries to take the ordination. Because the Vinaya is actually the same Vinaya, but it's not actually allowed, like their leaders are not allowing them to have a full ordination yet. Yeah. And in Theravada, I mean, yeah, it's still kind of somewhat controversial. But I think the more we actually live it, you know, people can't really argue anymore that it's not possible. Once they see us doing it, it's already happening. Same in Thailand, you know, the official line is, okay, we don't allow bikini ordination, but actually bikinis are happening, being respected, and so it's a kind of underground way, you know, you just start doing it, and after a while people have no more complaints, as long as you, you know, do it well. So there is that responsibility, yeah.
Just wondering about the nuns from Dhammasara.
Yeah.
Are we expecting the nuns to come over as well, or what's the plan there?
Ajahn Brown suggested having a big boat, do you remember that? He suggested having a boat and making all the nuns row it. And the monks would kind of chill out on the deck.
In my dreams.
Who knows? There are a couple of nuns there who I pretty seriously asked to come over and give me some support at some stage if they could.
I'm sure they
would. It also depends on their abbot, whether or not she lets them come. But one of them shook hands on it, so I'm hoping she will. Yeah.
And the other question is, how are you receiving your daily dhana at the moment because you're travelling about? And
yeah.
How can the people here support
you? Yeah. most of the year is actually taken up, I must say. April, there's some time spare where I don't know where I'm going to be. So if at that time I come to London, a few people have said, you know, I could live in their house for a bit. At that time, I guess we'll put it on our newsletter and we'll say, okay, Chanda's in such and such place. Anybody wants to come? And if you're getting the newsletter, then you'll be able to come over. So we'll have a little roster.
You know the chanting, sorry.
Sorry, no.
The chanting you did yesterday.
This morning?
In English. Was that this morning?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you change the other bit to including nuns?
Oh, it was just a joke.
That was a joke.
No, but part of it was.
Like all living beings.
Oh, you mean
add
the word non?
Yeah, no, that was a joke.
Omitting non.
Omitting
non.
N-O-N-E.
Oh. You traumatised that lady.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Worst joke?
Worst joke. You haven't heard nothing yet.
I've
got much worse jokes than that. Put it in there. That's funny.
It's the same as feeding none.
Okay, over there.
Yeah. I also think Woodism is amazing. It sounds really exciting. I just wanted to say, because I'm actually the chair of an addiction charity.
Oh.
And we managed to get it. We're now in rented property. We managed to actually get free office space for 3 years.
Wow.
From somewhere called Skyline, it was called Skyline's Village near Canary Wharf. I don't know if we've done it, but there are places out there which can do that. And we've got a whole office. We've got, like, you know, a boardroom, we've got sort of meeting rooms and everything.
Wow.
Completely free.
Gosh.
3 years on a lease. So it might be worth just looking up. Some of the sort of philanthropic organisations. If you've got a charity member and a, you know, trust or whatever, there are places where you can apply.
Okay.
Believe me, I spend days looking at, like, different places which would accept perhaps what we do and provide grants or money or foundations or buildings or whatever. And there are loads of them. There are absolutely loads of them. Grants directory or
Are you planning on doing any more fundraising and possibly in the States, like in New York or the West Coast, for the project? Or is that something that...
I haven't really thought about it, other than my little trip to New York, which I mentioned. That's just giving a little talk.
Because
I don't know if we could combine it with some kind of fundraiser.
I mean, maybe there's a, you know, there's a, I know my group, there's a quite a following.
Oh.
Yeah. And on the West Coast, I think, there's already monasteries there.
Right.
It's actually taking basically money from other bhikkhunis. So New York would be a good idea.
Yeah. If you'd like to organise something. That'd be great.
No, it's okay.
We already had people organise things in Thailand after a retreat. They organised a book sale.
Okay.
And then in Singapore, Bodhi Nyana Singapore have sponsored some of these retreats. The two main ones, this one and the one at Marywood Hall. So yeah, the international support is fantastic because it just spreads the word and gets more and more people involved.
Yeah, I have a very good friend that works for UNICEF that is a huge fan of Ashram.
And
I'm sure we'd be
willing to participate.
Excellent.
Okay,
good.
Does Donald Trump know me yet? Because he's got
it. I don't know that he'll take you. Comment.
Well, he's got a few spare cash. Okay, he needs to make some good karma quickly.
Okay, one more question, one more maybe, and then we could move to the tea room to continue. Yeah.
How about me in Europe? Are you going there?
I'm going over there to teach, and there is another little bikini place coming up in Belgium quite soon. I think it's going to be a smallish place, maybe 2-3 cuties to start off. So certainly, you know, the links will be there, but Ajahn specifically wanted something in England just because it's his home country and also mine, you know, so it's a kind of debt of gratitude I feel I have to pay. So it'll most probably be here. We've set it up to be over here.
Could you just give people details so they can follow you, or have you done it on a leaflet? Like,
well, we've got a website, and there's an option.
That maybe that everyone knows how to keep track of it and be part of it.
That's right. I mean, again, because of kind of, we're only a small team at the moment, and we're just starting, really. I mean, this tour's a bit of a miracle, because we're actually, it was just people coming in at the right time that made it possible. So we haven't got a very public address. Like, there was one for the bookings, so a lot of you had that email address. But eventually, when we get enough like admin people to volunteer, then we'll have put up the email address on the website. But for now, there's a newsletter you can sign up for, and also ticket information for events and volunteering information. So we send that out monthly or so, depending on whether we have anything to tell you. On the website, but how's it going with the list? Yeah, there should be a list with all your names where you can subscribe. Yes, we'll include you on the newsletter.
should people come up to...
Who's got the list?
I have
the list. You have the list. Amina always has these things.
I'll be outside with the list if you want.
Okay, shall we move to the tea room, and I can be available if anyone wants to discuss any further.
Very good.
Don't want to deprive you of the last tea. So thank you so much for being here. It's just been fantastic and really supportive. And yeah, and thank you to Ajahn Brown.
Okay, good. Now, we finish off retreats. Some of you have been to my retreats. By saying the word sadhu, which means awesome. It does. It's an absolute translation inside of me. It's awesome. And we do it with full energy. So please follow me. 1, 2, 3. Sadhu! 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 There we go.